special meeting of the Governor Beach City Council for Monday, May 14, 2012. Would you all please rise with us for a pledge? Please follow me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Here.
Present.
Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Donna. Let's move into our public communications this evening. I do have one speaker request form for public communication, and that's Deborah Love.
Hi, Deborah Love, 605 Grove Court, Arroyo Grande, and I'm the executive director for the Exploration Station. I have a couple things tonight, and the first thing is I would like to say what a delight it was to attend Train Day and represent Grover Beach. And we talked to hundreds and hundreds of people, handed out countless pieces of information, telling people where Grover Beach was and all the wonderful things they could do if they took the train up to visit us. It was just a fabulous opportunity. I'm so glad I got to go. And we already have a lot of ideas for next year's event, so already planning. On the train ride back, I also had the opportunity to talk with Kathy quite a bit, Kathy Petker, and stationed between 9 and 11. For the last few months, we've been working with a team of Cal Poly students who are taking a special exhibit building class, and we've been kind of guiding them along the way, telling them about the sorts of things we're looking for at the Exploration Station, and they've come up with some incredibly creative ideas. And if you'd like to come along, we're going to get to see the next step in those prototypes and also witness how they go over with a group of fifth grade students who will be also be attending from Fairgrove Elementary School. So again, please, you're all invited to attend Thursday, May 24th between 9 and 11, and hope to see you. And if you have any questions at all about it, just shoot me an email or give me a phone call. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah, and I'm glad to see you survived the long journey to Los Angeles, and you guys got up pretty early to very good. Is there anyone else that would like to address the Council on Public Communications this evening? Okay, seeing no one coming forward, let me close it and bring it back to the Council. And let's move into our public hearings tonight. The first one is a discussion regarding the proposed charter city. City Manager Peralta.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Back on April 16th, the council reviewed concepts relative to the conversion of the city's form of government from a general law city to a charter city, and we subsequently received direction to develop a draft and bring it back at this particular special meeting. Just to refresh your memories again, the charter city charter document becomes, in essence, once approved by the fairs. And that primarily is primarily is a priority reason for considering converting to a charter city, is because it offers the city the opportunity to have a greater control over what is considered more local affairs. It provides a greater independence from the state. It insulates the city from some of the state actions and provides a firewall, if you will, in terms of that kind of protection. The charter adoption enables the city to operate more efficiently by controlling the city's bidding and purchasing standards rather than the interference of the state. There is the prospect that project costs can be eliminated. This comes actually from two different areas. One is the exemption from prevailing wage, but the other is having the ability to again control your own bidding and purchasing procedures across the board. The charter is intended to provide some measure then of local fiscal autonomy. And because you're able to take a look at the list of items that really make up the municipal affairs, you're really able to structure local government so it more closely fits the needs of the local community. There are lots of potential disadvantages. There are some potential. What would be an example of that? Well, an example of a project that might be considered a statewide concern might be a major flood control project, to give you an idea, or something tied in with Lake Lopez. That may be something that might be of statewide concern. There are obviously plenty of projects that the city does do that are locally funded, however. Those include local street projects, waterfront and other utility projects, just to name a few. Obviously, putting the charter on the ballot is a costly affair in terms of time and effort. We have to go through an extensive public hearing process. That's the first hearing we're hearing tonight. We're having tonight. That'll be followed, if the council so directs, with a second hearing in June and a final item in July. All of those things take time and effort to put together, and my guess is that cost is probably between $5,000 and $7,000. The remainder of the cost is a high estimated cost as to what it takes to place a item on the ballot. I took that estimate primarily from the estimates we received earlier in the year, and I want to indicate that that may be on the high side based on the fact that this is actually going to be a general election and there will be a lot of different jurisdictions participating, so those to look at. And what I've done here is more or less summarize the main parts of that charter. What we did in coming up with the draft, we attempted to follow the council's direction to keep it relatively simple. You should be aware that unless an issue is treated in the charter, all existing laws and rules stay in effect, unless it's specifically addressed in the charter. And so we were very specific. We took a look at another number of other templates of cities that have been successful in putting the charter in place, and that included the cities of Solvang, included Santa Maria, and some of the cities that are currently putting forward measures for voter consideration. Just to summarize what you have in your packet in terms of the charter itself, Section 200 establishes the form of government, and essentially this maintains the existing council manager form as we presently are so constituted. Section 201, election officials, obviously calls out that the council will consist of a directly elected mayor and four council members. That's pretty much the same as what we have currently with the next. Summary 202, council member compensation. This section makes no changes in the way that council members are compensated. Essentially, that would remain as it is in state law, and state law essentially provides that provides that council members can be compensated based on the size of population, I believe, and you would see no change there. Section 300, economic development. This just simply makes a policy statement. Sometimes it's important to make policy statements and that provide guidance in what we do. And this essentially promotes economic development, which is a frequent priority that the council has identified in your annual goals. Section 301, this section requires the city to comply with state laws for competitive bidding of certain public works and professional service contracts. Council may wish to consider changing this item to provide more flexibility. I distributed and we can go over it more in detail later, but I distributed some additional language that the council may consider that actually does a little bit more of tailoring these particular areas to city concerns. Section 302 is the section regarding prevailing wage, provides for the exemption from prevailing wage requirements for locally funded projects that are not of a institution. Section 304 is a section regarding supporting volunteers in Grover Beach. Certain state requirements limit our ability from time to time to use volunteers. This is really, in staff's opinion, an item for a local concern, and so essentially you would have to have the ability to identify any criteria for volunteers and find ways of promoting volunteers in Grover Beach. And something we already know, we have a great number of volunteers, and it's a great way to continue to use that fine resource. Section 305, limitations on taxing authority. This basically keeps in place all the existing limitations on taxing authority. There's nothing created new here that provides the ability of the city to go out and raise any additional revenue that would not be under the guidelines of Proposition 218 and all of the certain current state law and codes. Reductions prohibited. This is Section 400. Is again probably a more of a policy statement. This section prevents the reduction of the city sources by any other level of government. This is kind of a Proposition 22 argument, if you will, an extension of that, and hopefully provides us a little more protection from any kind of raids by any other kind. What I'd ask you to do, Gayla, is if you'll just put up that language that I'd like to have the council consider. Essentially, this would rewrite 301, and if it doesn't come up, I'll just go ahead and read it. There it is. It essentially says that the city shall have the power to establish standards or regulations related to the purchasing of goods, property, or services, including but not limited to the establishment of local preferences. Public works contract is used in this section, means an agreement for the erection, construction, alteration, repair, improvement of any public structure, building, road, or other public improvement of any kind. The council may establish by ordinance or resolution all standards, procedures, rules, or regulations to regulate all aspects of the bidding award and performance of any public works contract. Essentially, the next steps would be for this council to ask staff any questions that you may have. I'd also draw your attention again to the chart that was a part of the attachment to the staff report, because it offers a comparison between general law and charter cities. This, in essence, really is, if you will, a drafting meeting, and you know, please feel free to provide staff with a direction ultimately, should you wish to proceed with any of the changes you're able to port.
Thank you, Bob. Let's see if there's any questions. Let me look to my right first. Karen, you have any questions?
I do have a few questions.
Okay.
Thank you. Regarding within the staff report, underneath the disadvantages,
mm-hmm.
The third bullet says amendments to the charter can be placed on the ballot for consideration by the voters by local initiative process signed by just 15% of the city electorate. Who would pay the cost to put that on the ballot?
That city attorney, if it were an initiative.
Speak up. I have one here. Thank you. An initiative process through the public would be funded by those who move forward with the initiative.
Very fine. Thank you. And then I understand that about one quarter of the states in California are charter cities.
Yes, that's correct. 120 or so.
Okay. Do you know of any that have gone back or have reverted from a charter city to back to general law city?
Recently, when you're talking, you know, over the course of the history of the state, I'm sure there have been a few.
But you don't know of any examples.
I've heard that, in fact, this city was a charter city at one time. But
questions at this point in time.
Okay, very Thank good. You. Phyllis, you have questions?
Thank you. Okay. What I would like to do is go down each section. I have no problem with section 200, 201, 202, or 300. I would like an explanation on section 301, how this alternative section that you've provided us with is different.
Well, I will start and then ask you to amplify. It is different in that state contracting code right now has certain requirements, certain bidding thresholds, et cetera, that the city has to comply with. For instance, a public works project is defined, I believe, in state law as any public project, construction project, over $175,000. The city would have the ability to change that however it saw fit. City attorney?
Basically, it provides greater flexibility with regard to how the city goes about contracting for work. It would provide a greater flexibility to the city with regard to how it contracts, how it bids for work, and basically would make the state law with regard to local projects, ones that are not funded by state or federal monies or ones that are not of statewide concern, inapplicable.
That does not answer.
They're submitted, there are publishing requirements, et cetera. That's a threshold amount in their state law. If the city chose to lower that threshold amount to, for example, $100,000 or raise it to $250,000, it could do so as a charter city. You would have the flexibility not to have to comply with the state law.
Okay. Okay, next, Section 302, the prevailing wage. I did some research myself, and I looked into a lot of examples of this. My biggest concern is when the number of projects that we do in this city that are funded with grants from federal or state are actually a good percentage of what we do. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I think it's very important to remember that whatever else we do, we need to make sure that we have proper skilled workers. And I think that's my biggest concern, is that everything requires some amount of expertise. And if you go along with not having that particular expertise just because it's cheaper, that is a really big concern that we need to consider. And also, a lot of the statistics that I saw showed that a lot of labor then came from out of the area. And I thought we were very concerned about shop locally, promoting local workers. And I think that this instance right here, if we had this, would actually do the opposite. So that's my big concern. I think I would like to have an example for Section 400, the reductions prohibited. Could you give me an example of that happen? I thought this was happening statewide to everyone. I mean, I'd like an example of, you know, how this would work in benefit for us.
It may, Mr. Mayor, can I?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and finish?
And then, Mr. Mayor, if you'd like, I can respond to the prevailing wage question as well.
Okay.
First of all, the reduction, this is, I'll grant you, is more of a policy statement rather than a panacea. Let me give you another example, stormwater mandates. The recently, 2 years ago, we actually contested the permit requirements for stormwater because there was no local funding source to offset those costs at the time. And we had very little to do with debating whether we should or should not implement that program. We actually went to the Regional Water Quality Board and protested the implementation of those measures, and we lost there, and then we went on to the state, and the state refused to hear the argument. The last choice for us would have been going to court. What does this do? This provides us at least some basis to stand on in terms of items when we may, in fact, be challenged by the state. So that's the purpose of both this section. Your example, you indicated that in the past your research showed that there were cities that ended up attracting contractors from outside the area. Well, local control over bidding means that you may, in fact, be able to limit and identify where you're setting, where you're recruiting the bidders from, and that's a more local approach. From staff's perspective, and it's a and why we're offering the recommendation, and obviously it is up to the council as a whole to determine whether they should want to go forward with that part of it or not. But the prevailing wage issue is whether we want that decision to be made in Sacramento or whether we want that to be made locally. That's what the reason that staff placed this in the charter.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, okay. Your example of the stormwater, are you saying that there are some cities in California that are not going to have to comply with that state requirement?
There are
because they're charter cities?
I'm not aware of any, but I will say there are some cities that are, in fact, challenging that very fact. And having this kind of document or this kind of clause in our charter, should we be faced with having to do that, will give us an additional weapon to use.
Okay. All right. That's all for now. Thank you.
City Attorney, do you have anything you wanted to add? Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
I'm wondering.
Tentatively scheduled for July 16th. And the actual submission date, I believe, to the county is something like July 23rd. So we're getting very close to that with the July 16th meeting.
Okay. And then I was wondering, I'd really like to see or like to have, like to know which projects are the projects that we're looking at. We're working on in this next fiscal year, starting in July, so 2012, 2013, which ones would qualify not to use prevailing wage?
Any of totally funded local street projects.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the proposed budget reflects $200,000 for streets. Granted, that won't provide you a lot, but it... essentially, if you chose to use all of that $200,000 on local streets, that would be a project that would qualify. We have about $300,000 in water projects that are in the CIP for that same period. So that's another project that would qualify. the municipal network, if the council were to continue to move ahead with that, as you've indicated in the budget, and that were all locally funded, it would also qualify. The other point about the prevailing wage is, and I would ask the council to not only look at the short term, but the long term as well. There will be other projects down the road that will also qualify.
And do you have, can you give a
specific projects? It would probably be difficult simply because it depends on the amount of labor that's contained in each project. But to give you an example, if you were to use a relatively labor-intensive project and let's say 80% of that was labor costs, you could be expected to save somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20% of those labor costs.
Okay. And do you have you managed to speak with any of the cities that are doing this and found out whether or not they are actually saving money?
The city of Solvang reports that it's been able to save money. And I could follow up further, as well as the city of Santa Maria.
The city of Tulare saved about $3 million on a wastewater treatment plant project.
Okay. That was all for now.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
I have no questions at this time.
Okay. And my questions have been asked and answered. And since this is a public hearing, I'm going to open this up to the public. And I have, looks like, about five speaker request forms. First up is Steve Weiner. And I know Steve had passed out the little blue flyer.
Test 1-2.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Steve Weiner. I'm the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Tri-Counties Building and Construction Trades Council. I represent 34 affiliate unions and approximately 7,000 members in the Tri-Counties. In your packet that I passed out for you, there's a study on prevailing wages, why it would make sense for Grover Beach wage. In that case study, it suggests that the prevailing wage increased local contracting. But in Gilroy, 18 of the 33 listed subcontractors and general contractors were based in Santa Clara County, totaling 71.2% of the total project value, which went to a local contractor. In Palo Alto, only one of the 33 listed contractors were based in Santa Clara County, totaling 11.7% of the total project value, which went to a local contractor. So you really don't increase local contractors by doing away with prevailing wage. Why is prevailing wage good for the cities? It's in the best interest of the cities to keep and not discard prevailing wage. Since the repeal of some state prevailing wage laws in the 1980s, economists have studied the effect of prevailing wage or the lack of. The findings are consistent. Promised savings never materialize when prevailing wage is repealed. Wages are pushed down throughout the industry. The workforce becomes less skilled, experienced, trained, and more dependent on non-citizens. Cost overruns increase. Lower paid workers spend less, harming the business climate. Sales tax and income tax revenues to the government decline. Studies show that training of the apprenticeship are jettisoned to lower the bids. Lack of training and apprenticeships harm the quality of the work. Overruns and delays skyrocketed, canceling any savings from lower wages. The state tax base is damaged, and a study of highway projects shows that projects with prevailing wages save more than $100,000 per issue. Forcing down wages depresses the entire region. All other governments, federal, state, county, schools, utility districts, and general law cities pay prevailing wages. There must be beyond to something good when they do that. Nearly 60% of the current charter cities in California have simply adopted state prevailing wage laws. Another 10% have made only minor adjustments in them. It only makes sense not to reinvent the wheel. Despite claims to the contrary, none of the other 30% can conclusively demonstrate savings and eliminating prevailing wage rates. The city of Vista is currently fighting this issue in court, and I believe the decision should be coming out the end of May or sometime in June. So don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Cities win with prevailing wages. And also in your packet at the bottom of one of the pages, there's a link to the study by Peter Phillips from the University of Utah on the repeal of prevailing wages. I have the study here, but I didn't want to print it on out, give you 100 pages, figure it'd be better for you to go online and look at it.
Great.
But it was done in 1995.
Thank you, Steve. Tom Gutierrez.
Good evening. My name is Tom Gutierrez. I represent the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators and Asbestos Workers. I don't want to duplicate what Steve says. I'm in full support of prevailing wage. It's helped a lot of our construction workers live a good life and putting a lot of our kids through college. I myself, four daughters, I've been fortunate enough to put them through college with this prevailing wage and keep it going. I also represent I'm a volunteer for the Helmets to Hard Hats. Money they can pay for their kids and start growing communities instead of knocking down communities overseas. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Michael Seaman, followed by Walt French.
Good evening. My name's Michael Seaman, and I've been in the Operating Engineers Union for 27 years, and I was in the Laborers Union 4 years prior to that. And, you know, prevailing wage has provided myself and my family a good living. You know, I have a young son that's getting ready to go to Cal Poly, and without the wages that I've earned over the years and hope to continue to earn, I would not be able to put my son through college, which, you know, he would like to be an electrical engineer, which I'm proud of him because he got accepted on academic honors. But the other thing, too, is the quality of the work. When we start lowering the wages of workers and we lower the quality of the work, and I think that definitely for the taxpayers is not a benefit. We all pay taxes, and we want to see the monies go into projects that are going to last for the community. And when we start cutting the dollars on that, I think that the community suffers with the quality of the work. Also, then you start getting people coming from out of town, bidding the projects, and their money doesn't get spent here. They take their money to another county or city and spend their money there. So I'm in support of the prevailing wages, and I think they are a benefit to the community. And so thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Walt French, followed by Walt Mankins.
Good evening. Walt French, 1042 Atlantic City, contracting. The state has certain laws that are in place for specific reasons, and those laws are to protect people and contractors and cities like Grover Beach. You know, here we are in the middle of the state, and we want to do away with state laws. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm the business manager right now of the Plumbers and Steam Fitters Union. You talked about a water project. Or $300,000 in water projects. Right now I have 25 apprentices that go to school two nights a week for 3 hours a night in San Luis Obispo and do nothing but study water projects, how to construct them, how to install them, how to maintain them, those things. Most of my apprentices live right here in Grover Beach. About 80% of my apprentices in the whole county live in Grover Beach. Okay, if we decide to adopt this charter city and we start getting folks coming from out of the area, which is normally what happens, those people will displace those individuals that live in Grover Beach. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to displace those folks, and those folks will no longer be able to pay rent. They won't be able to exist in the city, and there you have problems. So, once again, I'm absolutely not in favor of this move by the city to become a charter city. And I've been a member of the city since 1974. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Walt. Walt Mankin, followed by Anita Schauer.
Construction Trades Council. Very proud to say that. There's an awful lot of great men and families that are affected by our efforts every day. A great many of them live in this community. We urge them to vote. Hopefully that's because some of you here are here today. know, we like to see things go right. We need a good living wage. I've seen the prevailing wage not adhered to in the past. What it is basically a discrimination type of action, if you want to look at it. If you don't have prevailing wage, you're not going to have union contractors that can even bid on the work, even though they're, you know, they're better ones or whatnot that could do that type of work. Anybody could come in and bid that work. If it's not prevailing wage, they get to pay their people under the contract that they're under for that type of work. Or the other people, okay, so you keep paying them $30 an hour, they can give them $15. It's a cost savings deal to the city. I can see that. But is that worth taking that lifestyle away from the family, the people who are living here, buying their homes here, sending their kids to school here? You know, money's money. It's got to go anywhere. I know there's an awful lot of money given away to, you know, different welfare systems and whatnot. I've asked myself a long time ago, where is the incentive for a person to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and get up, put his boots on, and go out and get a job, go to work, versus a person, say, on the system, they can stay home, draw many benefits for not really doing anything. And I think, you know, keeping these wages up where they belong in the long run would be a cost. The prevailing wage, excuse me, the charter city would go through. They perhaps could have an ordinance that would keep prevailing wage intact. I can understand there's economic benefits to perhaps going with the charter city. But as it stands now, if we're talking taking a prevailing wage out of it, I am totally against it. And that's basically it in a nutshell. So thank you so very much for your time, and hope we can come and do the right thing for this community. And because there's been 120-some cities in the state have gone charter, I don't know if 120 right decisions have been made. Thank you.
Thank you all. Anita Shower, followed by David Baldwin.
Good evening. I am Anita Shower. I live at 867 North 6th Street in Grover. A couple of weeks ago at our local Rotary meeting, I asked Mr. Peralt, who came up with this concept, and Mr. Peralt said that he came up with this wonderful concept. This evening's topic is charter city. The purpose of a charter city is to have more authority over its municipality than what is already allowed by the state. Even with state law in place, a charter city may go around what the state has decided and dictated. A charter city deals with charter law. Now, that is really an interesting concept. Charter law cities may decide what findings are required for conditional use permits and variances, whereas general law cities must follow the state regulations on these kinds of decisions. From personal experience with Grover Beach, I find this to be far from the truth. You decide their development so they can build what they want and how they want. You allow it without any consideration for the neighborhood. If someone comes before you who opposes a project and that person is not a favored resident, then the process for justice must cost thousands and thousands of dollars without question. Realize that I am speaking from experience, Council. We are a city of 13,132 residents. Every city that you've talked about this evening are cities of over 93,000 people. Remember, I said this is a city of 2.3 square miles. That's what it is. That's what it's always going to be. We are completely landlocked. That's not news to any of you. A charter city allows the city to take matters into their own hands. In our case, our city council would be in charge. You would determine what your monthly salaries would be and what the salary of the city manager would be. You would determine the number of years for the terms of office for the city council and for the mayor. That is what I read. So this is how you're going to be able to take the mayor's position that we, the citizens, have determined to be 2 years, which we did by a vote, and stretch it to 4 years. How utterly convenient. It also may enable the mayor to appoint additional counsel to assist the city attorney. Who pays for that additional counsel? what on earth goes on around here that we would need additional counsel? One of the major reasons for a charter city is to place acres of land aside city. An additional purpose is to propose health and safety for the residents of this city. You are already doing that. We have a police department. We have the five cities fire authority. You are doing this under a blanket of saving money. That's the way you are proposing it. It's not true. What is true is it will give you more authority and more authority over your salaries. Thank you.
Thank you, Anita. David Baldwin, followed by Alex Lansberg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is David Baldwin. I'm a lifelong resident of the county here. I live in Los Osos. I'm also a graduate of the Cement Masons training program. I went through the apprenticeship program and worked with my tools for 12 years in that trade, and now I'm the business rep for the Cement Masons Union here in the two counties. I'm here to speak specifically to the charter city issue when it comes to prevailing wage. You know, clearly it's a bad idea all the way around, however you slice that. I talk to non-union employers all the time. You know, it's part of my job to build relationships with them and do our best to work with them. We also dispatch our apprentices to those public works projects, whether they're union or non-union. And one thing they're always telling me, especially here in these last several years when it's been so tough in the economy, is, you know, how in the heck does that guy across town or from the next town over beat me on these bids? You know, I'm bidding this thing so tight. You know, the state saw fit to try to level this playing field. And I applaud you for doing your homework. I heard, I think at least one of the council members mentioned that they had looked into some of the provisions. They don't hinder your ability to get projects done with quality work on time under budget. It's actually the opposite. The prevailing wage is the reason you get the biggest bang for your buck, because just like anything else in life, you know, at a certain point you get what you pay for. You know, and we take seriously our training programs. We have apprentices here that live also in Grover Beach area. And the charter city status, you know, doesn't have to mean that you eliminate prevailing wages. So I hope that you'll think hard on that and make the right decision there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Alex Lansberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Alex Lansberg. Excuse me. My name is Alex Lansberg. I'm a researcher with smartcitiesprevail.org. I sent you all an email earlier, I think last week or something like that, when I saw that this discussion was going to be coming up. And while I wasn't expecting all these folks to recapitulate a lot of the stuff that I said, it's certainly great to hear. I did want to address a couple of things that Mr. Perl said in his report that I think sort of obfuscate and sort of they don't present the issue as clearly as it could be. First of all, he mentioned the city of Tulare. We were involved with that in a small way, monitoring that project. The contractor who did that work actually, for the most part, did pay prevailing wages on a vast majority of their trades. The city of Tulare has, with the Harbor Beach Aquatic Center, has been to put it bluntly, an utter disaster. Some of the stuff that I sent you, I documented some of the research that went in that. This is a town that managed to, stepping into the construction depression, managed to cut half of the size of the project and only cut the budget on it by about 20%. In between taking a bid or budgeting for something with prevailing wages and then walking in and actually bidding the thing without prevailing wages. One of the pieces actually was a bathroom that they ended up spending more on without prevailing wage than with. A couple of other things, Mr. Perl said that projects where labor component is 80%. You know, public works doesn't happen like that. Typically, construction labor is about 20 to 25% of your project. So if you're talking about a savings of 20% off the labor specifically, assuming that you don't lose anything in productivity or time delays or just wastage on the project, you're talking about 4%. 4% or 20% on 20% is 4%. Lastly, about the charter, we've been monitoring a lot of the shenanigans happening in Auburn, and it's perhaps fitting that Auburn, a city of about 13,000 people, has a charter that's going to be on the ballot, and from what we hear from our sources, is going to go down resoundingly because it is divisive. It's expensive. The city's already spent $25,000 to litigate on it and probably going to spend twice as much more. But some of the stuff that we saw in this one is almost a direct cut and paste of that very charter. So I realize my time is ending. The fine shot themselves in the foot in going down this road. Take a look at why the city of Gilroy decided.
Alex, I need you to wrap up.
I will. I'm sorry about that. See why the city of Gilroy decided to go with prevailing wages. And again, it doesn't come from me. It comes from their public works director who actually conducted the survey and made the recommendation to council. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, I have no more speaker request forms. I'm going to close this to the public and bring it back to the council. City manager, was there anything that you heard that you felt needed some clarification?
I think I was the one.
And city attorney.
Thank you. That mentioned city of Tulare. And I guess one of the points made was that even though city of Tulare, and I'm the city attorney for city of Tulare, does not have prevailing wage requirement, contractors still come in and hire and bid and pay prevailing wages. And that is up to the one who's bidding on what they wish to do.
Very good. Thank you, City Attorney.
Mr. Mayor, a couple of other things that I'd like to clarify. Number one, against the question about the number of cities that are large or small. I think if you look at that list of 120, they pretty well span the gamut. There's cities like the city, I believe, of Danuba, which is extremely small, is a charter city. Amongst Solvang in our neighborhood, I think, is less than 7,000 population, if I'm not mistaken. So it pretty well spans the gamut. From staff's perspective, local government, want to indicate that compensation as was addressed in the charter would remain exactly as it is per state law. That was another issue that was your council member compensation would remain exactly the way it is. The personnel system as currently in place in the city remains exactly as it is today. And the other element is the components completed here are trying to look prospectively as well. That doesn't mean that simply because the state hasn't entered into that particular area at this point that they may not at some point legislate. And this is an area of municipal affairs that city felt or at least staff felt was worthy of inclusion in the draft.
Very good. And then just to put this in the proper context, what is before this council tonight is a draft that the council will have discussion on. And if the council chooses to go forward, that no charter would go into place unless it is it must be voted upon by the registered voters in this community. So the council will not be making any unilateral decisions tonight or in a subsequent meeting. So just to make sure we keep this all in proper perspective. So let's have some discussion. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I would like to clarify one point. One of the speakers, the last one, mentioned Oceanside. I would like to comment that I have done some research on this. I have talked to the city manager of Oceanside. I have a bunch of information that was forwarded. Boat owners of Oceanside got together and said this is not fair to build a community center by using the proceeds from boat rentals, the boat slip rentals. And it was as a result of that that they cut back on the project and reduced the size of the facility that they were going to build, because the boat slip renters and the people in the community did not think that that rental fee should go towards a community center at the aquatic center. that's why that project was shot down, changed. And they did build the other smaller facility, which is primarily for the boaters to use, the kayakers and storage space and stuff like that. The other thing I want to comment on is this Charter City proposal, the prevailing wage is, in my opinion, a very, very small part of being a charter city. We have an obligation to represent the citizens of this community. I believe, and done the research that I have done, I believe that we could better represent this community, the people in this community, if we were a charter city. We take away some of the state controls and put some of the controls within our own body, within the council here, so that we have more to say about what goes on within this community. It, to me, it does not have that much to do with prevailing wage. The only real complaints that I've heard all evening is prevailing wage, prevailing wage, prevailing wage. That is a very small part of what we're doing, and I think it should be left in that position, in that category. That's all I got to say right at
the request bids. We give preference to local businesses, and we keep it as local as we can, as we're able to. I also echo Council Member, or sorry, Mayor Pro Tem Nichols' comments. And my thinking about all of this is that just as we would like to keep the decisions that we make local, I think that we should put those decisions in the hands of contractors, the contractors who are doing the work and doing the bidding. And if it's really true that, and I believe it may well be true, that contractors who are paid prevailing wage do a better job, then the contractors who bid will choose them. And so that's really it becomes a non-issue. So if prevailing wage is the better way to do it, when people bid for contracts, they will select workers who are paid prevailing wage. So I'm not that worried about it. I think that that if they're better, they'll be chosen. And so I don't have an issue with that particular one. I'd like to put the control in the hands of the people who are doing the bidding. Let them make the choice, not have them be dictated to as to how they'll run their businesses. And I think that it's a philosophical question partly, but it's also a question that's been brought about by the state constantly being on the take and us having no opportunity to do anything at all about it. And I think it's time for us to take back some of that power so that we can protect the money that comes local and keep it local.
Okay, very good.
We have volunteers at work in the Parks and Recs. Why is this going to be any different? All I see here is that the laws and requirements generally relate to insurance requirements. Don't we ask our volunteers to sign waivers releasing the city from any obligation? So I don't understand why this is such an important issue here.
Well, it is obviously one that is suggested for the council to determine whether you want to include it as a draft or not. Two things. Waivers should be required. The other part about this is that it is also a statement, again, of policy. It is not only to eliminate the ability of the state to come in and limit what we can do with local volunteers. They have done that in the past. Affordable housing projects come to mind. I think the point is more focused on creating, in this case, an area where the city would have its own ability to set up policies and procedures that are fitting for this organization, whether or not the state calls it in. And as I've said, future laws are a concern, especially in the volunteer area.
Okay. All right. Thank you. It's kind of interesting. When this Charter City was first proposed to us, the idea, everyone seemed to take out Section 302, Okay? Because that seems to be a big issue here with everyone who has come in. And a lot of the council here seems to think that it is actually not going to happen. So I suggest for this to go forward, we remove that particular section. All right. The other issue I still do not support is the state mandates and state controls. I still have not sold on the fact that we will be able to prevent the state from taking any future money. And I need this further explained to me before we go forward.
Okay. Thank you for those comments. Councilmember Wright.
I guess I get no explanations.
Councilmember Wright.
I didn't quite understand the volunteer issue. Would you mind going over that with me one more time?
Again, in the past, I've been aware that the state has legislated where the use of volunteers can come into place. The purpose of including it was simply to carve that portion out for this city to determine whatever policies or procedures should be put in place for the use of volunteers. It is more to promote the use of volunteers and limit any potential state interference in the use of volunteers.
Okay. Okay. So, as you said, it's a policy statement, pretty much, which many of these are policy statements. And no one's going to know that. That's not how this is going to work. And so those kind of comments are concerning to me because that isn't at all what we're trying to do here. No one is trying to increase their salary, I can tell you that. I just don't see where how we get to that, because as what I have read and I understand from my research on charter cities is that unless you've changed something with this charter, your laws stay the same, and they're governed by the state. So anything that we have written in our charter, if it differs from state law, then that's what it is, and that's what the voters will vote upon. Is that correct? So we're not going to be able to come back later, or some other, if I'm not sitting here next year, some other council might want to come back and say, well, now we've decided we're going to raise our salaries. They can't do that without going before the public. Is that correct?
Mayor?
Mm-hmm. Yes, City Attorney.
I'm sorry.
No,
that's all right.
I'm just trying to get this clear.
The laws or provisions that are not encompassed in the charter default back to the ones that are in place now. In other words, for those provisions that are governed by state law, they continue to be governed by state law. For those provisions that are governed by municipal code, they're governed by municipal code. For example, the best example I can think of is a term of office.
Right.
Currently,
okay.
The municipal code sets out the term of office for council members and for the elected mayor position to go through the process we're going through right now and take it to a little shorter process, not recreation of a charter, but you do have to go through public hearings and you have to put it on the ballot, and the voters get to decide whether or not the proposed change in the charter is going to be valid or not.
Thank you. That to me is extremely important from my own perspective as well as for, I think, many other people. Okay. Then there was another issue that I didn't read anything about that Michelle brought up. What the heck was it? Setting aside land for low-income housing.
And forgive me, I have no clue where that comes from. I really don't know. There perhaps is a charter somewhere out there that did that took some portion of a city and set aside. But that's not a general charter provision.
Okay.
Not anything that is
so something that
applicable
a city
everywhere. Right.
May have put into their charter.
Might have been some individual situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess the last thing is regarding prevailing wage. It could save us a lot of money. I think. I mean, I do public works contracts all the time, but at this point in time, we don't know what's going to happen with the prevailing wage issue. I mean, it's in litigation right now, so who knows? But I do believe that by structuring our bidding procedures, we can make sure that we get the best for our buck. Those are in place right now. You get references. You have liquidated damages. You have all these things, processes that you can do to make sure that the project is going along as it should. References alone, I mean, we have...
Do you want to discuss any of the changes that we might want to see incorporated into the charter at this time?
So why don't we do this? Let's take a few more comments, and then we'll see if there's consensus to continue moving forward. And if there is, then we will go through the draft as presented by staff.
Okay.
Did you have anything?
No.
Okay. Then I guess everyone else has had a lot to say tonight, and I've been patiently listening. And I just want to say there have been some really good comments, and then there have been some other comments. Let me just put it that way. And I definitely want the men and women of the unions to know this is not a referendum on the fine men and women parties establishment, and it is in no way aimed in that direction. I will just say from the city council or council majority, or even from my perspective, we've been dealing with the state and it's one size fits all. I've been doing this for 10 years, and I think the city manager talked about the Regional Water Quality Control Board that was placing onerous drainage standards on an infill community, saying that if it's a existing lot and you can take the lot on the corner of 7th and Grand, which has Shouts of Grace Church, if the owner came in and decided to invest on that property, he would then have to take a third of that land and put a drainage basin on it to return it to pre-development conditions. And so we went and fought that unsuccessfully. So the state does continue to have a one-size-fits-all approach. There are always efforts to take away local control from certainly will not unwind everything that the state puts out that we are following now as a general law city. There's just not enough time, and quite honestly, most charter cities don't do that. I do have a degree in city and regional planning and have dealt with cities of different sizes and facets, and I think I have a pretty good understanding of that. But let me just go to the issue of prevailing wage. And I certainly understand the concerns that have been put out here. Someone pointed it out earlier, and I didn't know who it was that talked about. The city does right now primarily use state and federal funding for our major capital projects. And I just honestly don't see that changing, even if I'm not on this council. So I think what we're really talking about are local funds, and I think the city manager, when was asked a question by Councilmember Peterson, said, well, what are some of the short-term projects? And I think even when he counted that up, it was $900,000, if that. So that's something that we're going to have to continue to talk about. I think the bidding process, and Karen, you covered that very well. I couldn't add any much more to that, but I would say the relevant thing for us is when every time we have to go through a bidding process because of state mandates, when you have to go out and do these bids and get multiple proposals, it adds anywhere from 3 to 6 months to a project. Consequently, I can say one of the biggest frustrating things for me is that there's typically 1 to 2 projects in this city a year, and to me that's just not acceptable. Karen, you said it. I'm not going to say any more on that. Now, with respect to term limits, and I know Ms. Shire brought this up, let me again clarify, to make this a personal thing and point it at me, but the truth of the matter is, and the fact of the matter is, the council members today are allowed to serve 2 4-year terms, 8 years total, if they are privileged enough and honored enough to be elected. The mayor, not myself, any future mayor, should there not be any changes to the term limits, would get 4 years total, 2 2-year terms, if they are so fortunate and privileged to be voted into office and then reelected. So somehow we need to find a way to make this fair for all who sit up here. And so if it's not an elimination of term limits, then maybe it is a discussion of 8 years total for all positions, meaning if council and mayor, and clearly the voters have the first and last say on all of that. So you know, I don't want us to feel like you need to shy away from that, to be threatened by someone to shy away from that, because as people have said, there are 13,000 people in this community, and there are nearly 7,000 registered voters. And I, when I took the pledge, said, I'll represent them, but I will also always give them a voice if given an opportunity. So I just want to make sure that we don't shy away from that. So at this point, I think we really need to just find out. And this is just staff's recommendation. And when the staff talks about we, he's really talking about the city, and that's the council, that's the staff, and that ultimately will be the voters in this community. So for now, is there a majority of the council that believes that we need to move forward with charter or an amended charter that ultimately would go to a vote of the citizens of this community? So,
I'd say yes.
Okay. So we're, is there a well, I'm just looking to see if there's a consensus.
I say yes. What,
maybe a straw poll. Am I okay in doing that, city attorney?
Certainly. And honorable mayor, council members, with obviously the understanding that you have, I think, two more public hearings on this issue, and you're going to be receiving information and testimony from the public, which may give you an opportunity to change direction if you desire. In other words, you're not committing to putting this on the ballot today. That's why the process provides for several public hearings, for public input, for time for you to consider all of the information that's provided. But staff would appreciate at this point in time, based at least on what you've seen and what you've heard, a response as to whether you wish to take the next step and move this proposal and the draft forward to the next public hearing with some direction from the council with regard to the actual verbiage or changes in any of the section, recognizing again that all of this is going to be a draft, and at the next public hearing everybody will have an opportunity to address it and discuss it and take the next step. And that next step could be reversal of direction, or it could be taking the next step forward.
Very good. And then ultimately, if I think someone had talked about, I think David brought this up, is if there's a charter and if there is not evidence to support the issue of prevailing wage beyond state and federal fund projects, there's an option to obviously move forward without that. So it's an evolving process at this point. Okay.
Well, I would like to allow the residents of Grover Beach to have
the alternative section 301, okay, because we didn't discuss that we were accepting that particular.
Well we were going to try and go down those, but I just want to make sure that everyone is saying let's move forward, and then we can. I think you went through each section point by point, and so I think we just need to do that right now.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So
let's start then.
Okay, because if everyone had said, hey, we don't like this concept, we're done, then it would have made this night a lot shorter. And I would have gone home and had dinner with my wife. But okay. So we've got a staff that's presented by, or a proposed charter as presented by the staff. It's attachment one in our staff report. I think there's extra staff reports on the bench over there, or the table over there. And so section 100, is everyone okay with the preamble and section 100?
Yeah.
Okay. Section 101 deals with the issue of powers. Okay.
Fine.
Section 102.
Fine.
Section 200.
There's no change from what we do right now, so I don't see where there's a problem with that.
Section, 201. This is elected officials. That's pretty consistent where we are now.
I have some comments on that.
Oh, okay.
Two things that I would like to see us add into section 201. The first one is a residency. Means that I think we should require at least 6 month residence within the city of Grover Beach to run for office on council or mayor.
Okay. Everyone okay with that?
I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it's really necessary, but I don't have a problem with it. 15 days, 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your other suggestion?
The other suggestion is I would like to put something in there and eliminate the term limits. I have seen the state of California, I personally think, since they eliminated term limits, this state has gone downhill. And I think it's a direct result of the elimination of term limits. We have people now running for state office. They know that they're limited in how long they can serve. They get in there on their first term, learn what they have to do to represent the people of the state. By the time they get that well in their mind, they have to start thinking about running for re-election and spend more time doing that than they do taking care of the problems of the state. I don't think I need to go on and specify all of the problems that I think exist from that. But I think it's obvious to everyone that this state has gone downhill since the day they made the decision to have term limits. I would like to see that be up to the voters of the community. If we have somebody in office that's doing a great job and they happen to have been in office for the term that they were elected for and reelected, then they're out of office, regardless of how good feel that they are doing the job. The decision as to whether or not they continue to serve should be up to the people in the community and not to some arbitrary law that's stuck out there for whatever purpose. I don't see a purpose in it. I personally would like to see us not have term limits, and that should be added to Section 201.
Okay, let's have some discussion.
Debbie? I have a question, and I don't know if staff know the answer or any of you know the answer, but have we ever had a problem in Grover Beach with not having term limits? Ever had an issue where someone was here forever and we couldn't get them out? And someone awful? Here I am.
Well, I was going to say that's a subjective matter.
Well, it is. But I guess I'm wondering, you know, if it's never been a problem, then why would we? There's no need for it.
Well, at the time, the voters thought that there was, and so it went to a vote, and that's what the voters decided. Mm-hmm. Shall I jump in, or?
No, you can jump in, please. Okay.
Is there not? There are term limits, but you still have, after 18 months or whatever, you can run again. Is that correct?
I think it's two years. And as a point of clarification, the term limits that came before the voters were in connection with the directly elected mayor. There was an option of 2 or 4 years for a term limit, and for the length of term. The term limits are contained in the municipal code. So they are not. If the council wishes to put the elimination or the term of office in place, then that would be the place to do it.
Okay.
In other words, if you can abolish the term limits and you can set a different term of office with this document.
So put another way, this is probably be a better way to give the voters a voice in that, because
absolutely,
previously it was a matter of just three votes on a Monday. Okay.
Well, you know, I think it's kind of interesting. Aren't they trying to reduce the amount of time people are involved in the state now? Went from 14 to 12 years.
That's an initiative.
Well,
right, and so isn't that because people are actually tired of certain people being in control or certain organizations or entities? I actually do not agree with what's been discussed right now. I think it should be left exactly the way it is. That's what the voters decided.
Actually, it's not what the voters decided. It's part of the municipal code. The term limits are municipal codes.
No, I meant for the particular for the mayor.
Oh, for the mayor?
Yes. Because in the past, wasn't it a rotating mayor?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so each council member had an opportunity to participate as a mayor?
That's a long, complex answer, but go ahead. City Attorney.
The prior process that was in place was an election from the council. In other words, there was no guarantee that everybody would have an opportunity to sit as a mayor.
The proposition that's out there right now, and I'm going to try and do this quickly and not, is basically something that I would suggest everyone get informed and educated on, because right now a member in the state assembly serves 6 years, a member in the state senate could serve 8 years if they are reelected, and if they're elected the first time. This new measure would allow them to be in one office for 12 years total, provided they get reelected. So the title in summary is a little misleading, and I'm going to stop there. Anyway, so we've been having this discussion. The Mayor Pro Tem had suggested something. So I think we know where Phyllis is on this. And Debbie, I wasn't sure. What's your thought on this?
I don't have a problem with eliminating term limits because people are going to vote and make up their own minds. And by the time you've been here for 4 years, they know whether you're doing the job or not, or whether you're doing the job they want you to do. So I think that the voters will decide.
Okay, and then his suggestion about elimination of term limits, is that your thought on that too? Mm-hmm. Okay. Karen?
I'm not really comfortable with that. I'm not quite sure why, because I really didn't even think, I didn't even really think in that direction when I was reading this document. So I'd really have to give that some thought. I don't know that I'm, first of all, it would concern me. I wouldn't want to put these other things in jeopardy for the sake of that. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to run again, you can later on if you want to do that.
Okay. Well, I'm not a big fan of term limits, but I don't feel strongly one way or the other. I'm not going to sit up and argue one side or the other. I think at the end of the day, it's a question of going forward, do we want to visit the issue of creating a fair, equal time as mayor and as council members through this process or through a municipal code amendment process, which is 3 votes on any given Monday.
And see, now that I didn't understand. So I need to know more about it. And as I said, I think the people, our voters, need to know more about it as well. So I think that would be a very interesting discussion to have.
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember,
yes.
If it's the wish of the council, staff can provide you with a brief report at the next time you meet pertaining to the charter, just some historical background, if I can come up with it, on how the code was changed, whether or not prior term limits existed, and basically lay out some of the options that you have, both with regard to the term limits themselves and with regard to the term of office for the directly elected mayor. So those are the two separate issues. One is, should a mayor's office position have the same 4-year period as council members? And that needs to go to the voters if it's going to be changed. And then the second issue is, will there be term limits? In other words, how many times can you serve the 2 or 4-year period in a row? Based on my knowledge of the code and what history is, that is an issue that was that can be changed.
City in this county and other counties, because I think, as I said, this doesn't apply to the current mayor. It certainly would apply to a mayor down the road. And so that's the question. Yeah.
Could we also have staff come back with some wording for that section if, in fact, the council decides that they want to eliminate term limits?
Okay. So
if majority of the council wishes, certainly.
So let me see if there's a council majority that would like a brief report as specified by the city attorney and some suggested language that the council can consider at the next meeting.
I think it would be helpful to all of us.
Okay.
I agree.
That's fine.
We have consensus on that. Okay. So then council member compensation, I was actually going to suggest that we reduce that $300 a month.
Yeah, because it went up 25 years ago.
Mayor, I'm sorry about regressing, but I just want to make sure we have clear direction from the council. There is a council meeting next Monday, but the charter issue is not going to be discussed during that meeting.
Okay.
So it would be at the next meeting pertaining to the charter that this report would be given.
That is correct.
Everybody's understanding.
That's what everyone has said, I believe.
Thank you.
Right?
I appreciate it.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. But thank you for checking. That's always good practice. So everyone's okay. No one's talking about changing compensation. No one's talking about changing elections or appointed officers. City clerk. Can we give the city clerk a raise through this process? She does a great job. Development?
Yes.
Okay. Public Works Contracts, Section 301.
That was the one that was there was proposed rewording, wasn't it?
Right.
Okay. Yes, that is the one.
So basically, a public works contract is just about anything we do, right? Fixing the streets. Can you clarify that term?
Yeah, city attorney.
Any construction project or... I'll leave it at construction project. That is funded partially or totally with public funds is a public works project.
Okay, which is everything we do.
Everything basically the city does, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Okay. So that's the alternative section wording.
I like the new wording.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, there's been a lot of discussion tonight on prevailing wage. What's the pleasure of the council on this one?
Well, do we know when the ruling's going to come down? Do you have any idea?
Just general knowledge that 90 days is the requirement, but and recognition also that there is no one that sits over the Supreme Court and makes them make a decision. They will issue the decision when they're ready to issue it. They generally comply with the timelines. It was argued on April 9th. I would expect to hear a decision from the court before the end of June.
Okay. Tonight, there's been a lot of discussion and a lot of information that's been given to us. So I'm not sure if we need a brief report, but maybe some additional time to kind of sort this one out. What's everyone feeling like tonight on this?
I'd like to have the wording a little bit different. I think exemption from prevailing wage requirement, because we're not saying that they can't use prevailing wage or we don't want them to. If they can save more money by using prevailing wage, we want them to use prevailing wage.
Okay.
And I think, and we're open, obviously, mm-hmm. however council wants mm-hmm. to proceed, but currently the section states no city contract shall require.
Okay, shall require. Okay.
Prevailing wage.
Okay. I was looking at, okay.
That's good.
I was looking at the summary. Right.
Unless
it's, right. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Which leaves the option both for city council and for mm-hmm. For the contractors to do something different if they decide on a specific project, for example, to do that.
Okay.
I still think it should be removed.
Okay. So Phyllis is saying remove it. Debbie, where are you at?
I like it the way it is.
Karen?
Yeah, I'm good with it.
Tim, Mayor Pro Tim?
Yes, leave it in.
Okay. So I think there's a majority. I'm tending to agree with this, but I do.
Yes.
And then I know there was discussion about volunteers in Grover Beach, and I don't know if this is, it's in here. I don't know if striking it or leaving it in really has a significant effect, but I'd say more local control is better.
I think we should leave it.
Us.
I mean, if it's a policy statement and we're making mm-hmm. a lot of this just is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I think section 305, I think that is definitely something that we'll want to keep in here because it talks about that the charter shall not be interpreted as giving the city greater authority to raise the level of taxes or fees.
Yeah, right. So, I think that's important to leave in.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Article 4, Section 400.
Nope. Well, yeah, that's the whole point, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Section 401, you okay?
Well, how do you support Section 400? How do you...
Critical mass, if enough of us do it.
How do you prevent anyone from doing that?
City Attorney?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. As identified by the city manager, the section provides the city with another tool to support an argument should an argument be decided to be raised by the council. For example, if there is an unfunded mandate or a provision of a law adopted by the state that takes revenue away from the city, another hit at local sales taxes, another hit at property taxes, should the council or should a number of cities decide to fight that, a charter city has a the state. Adopting this is not going to stop the state from doing whatever it is that they want to do, whatever other raid on local revenue is designed or instituted. But it provides charter cities with the ability to give the court one more thing to think about in the event that they want to go to war over the issue.
Okay. Well.
Mr. Mayor, just one more comment.
Yes, Bob.
And it's not only the state. You know, the dynamics that are being set up right now in the state budget would lend you to see in the future government agencies trying to siphon off money from other government agencies. And I'm not saying that it's something that's on anybody's agenda at the present time, but I can see the point where if push came to shove and the county decided that it needed additional revenue for a given reason, it is likely that the county government could also take the same approach as the state. In this kind of a situation, it's just a good government decision to do the best you can to protect local resources from anyone.
Well said.
But okay. Isn't the problem that they collect our property taxes and they've got it first?
It's not just property taxes. That
and
would
sales
be a
taxes?
Concern. They don't collect sales tax.
Who collects that?
The state.
The state does. Well.
Board of Equalization.
They're not going to give it back.
Okay, let's move on to Section 401. We good?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, Article 5, Section 500. Anyone have any problems with these or suggested changes? And I would just say 601, 602, and 603 as well.
Can we go back to Section 501?
Yes. Okay. What do you have?
We have a land use element, correct? Mm-hmm. And then we come up with zoning.
Uh-huh.
I have a little problem with our current way in which we do this because we have some areas of the city that I believe are improperly zoned, and I don't know if we can make it easier to correct those issues in this section here. Because, you know, everybody talks about, you know, this is our land use element and this is how it has to be. But it's supposed to be a living document. It needs to change as the city changes and grows. And I'm wondering if this should be broader or there should be something in this that addresses that.
City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. The Section 501 is basically a restatement of what the law provides for. And that is that when you adopt a zoning ordinance, that zoning ordinance has to be in conformity with your general plan. And if the council wishes to consider doing something different than that, then we would need to research and try to figure out how to structure that. But there is a process in place for amending the general plan. The council can do that 3 times a year, actually.
Yes.
And if there's the wish of a majority of the council to address some changes in the land use element, then that certainly can be accomplished.
I think that would be one of the benefits is to not be tied to the state required 3 times a year to basically mm-hmm. provide some flexibility.
We could review it more often.
Yes. So I think mm-hmm. we can have maybe if there's consensus to do that, we can have some wording presented at the next meeting. Yeah.
So we're yes, good. That's I think consensus. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I would just say from a legal aspect, we do want zoning to be consistent with the general plan, but certainly it is a living document because obviously trends change, councils change, and having flexibility to make those changes, even though we can do it right now, it's a little more cumbersome. So if we can find some way to have more flexibility, I think we're okay.
Is there a specific number other than three times a year that the council wishes to provide staff with, or should we leave it open for further discussion?
I would say we leave it open for further discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That sound good?
Okay.
Okay. So I think we've pretty much gotten through the draft, and at this point, staff's recommendation was to open, let's see. I think we've provided you some direction. So we've considered public testimony, reviewed the draft charter. So at this point,
there's nothing else to do.
And we need an official motion to that effect. Nope, we're good.
Can we make sure everybody knows when the next meeting will be held?
Yeah. City manager?
The meeting has been scheduled, tentatively scheduled. Unless the council states differently, we will notice it for June 18th.
June 18th, 2012, okay. At 6:30 p.m.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. If there's nothing else, then looks like adjournment is next. So we are adjourned.